coming in as Loeb. Milledyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, all right, all right. Let's get things going on this Tuesday hour of Flames Talk. It's Tuesday, November 5th with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. You can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Mr. Vickers.
Hello, Mr. Steinberg. Didn't know we were being so formal today.
Very formal. It's mailbag time. We need to be formal. It is.
I don't know what that voice is, but it's got me. It's got me hooked. Let's go.
It is Flames Talk mailbag time, and that is what the next hour is going to be dedicated to on this Tuesday. If you're listening live with us, 960-960 on the text line, get your texts in. Get your questions in. You want to talk about line combinations. You want to talk about Calgary's search for a center. Trade chips, goaltending, and a whole lot more. American League recalls, prospects, all of it is on the table. We'll try to answer as many of your questions to the best of our ability as possible. So 960-960 on the text line. Leave your name if you want to get a little credit for your question, and we'll dive into as many of these text questions as we possibly can. Already a few of them that we have in, and keep them coming. The longer we go and the more we get into a mailbag, the more the questions start coming rapid fire. So the earlier you get it in, the better chance we can spend some time on it. Shall we? You want to get right to it?
Yeah, let's get to it.
Hopefully, by the way, your week is going well, both you, Mr. Vickers, and to you listening, whether you're live or listening on podcast.
I'm with you all week, pal. It doesn't get any better than this.
Aww, thanks, man. Like that.
Oh, he did not pick up on the sarcasm. I'm just kidding. There was no sarcasm.
Let's start with Paul. Hello, Paul. Paul from Calgary says, how would you guys define success for the Flames between now and the end of the year? Good way to kick it off. Ooh, on the mailbag.
Existential.
And, you know, I don't really think my answer is that much different than it would have been prior to the 12 regular season games they've played, in that my definition of success this year were a few criteria. Number one, continue to build an identity for the organization and kind of set the standard for what the next number of years is going to look like. If this is a 3 to 5 year plan and this is year one or year two of that plan, depending on how you look at it, continue to build the foundation for what the next number of years are going to be. So that means set the standard for how this team is going to play, set the standard for what's acceptable, and really start to build an identity for what this team is going to be. And so far through 12 games, I think they've been largely successful at that. I think the other important piece of criteria for me would be just more development from the pieces that are going to be a part of this long term. So more development from Martin Pospisil, and you know, that has been kind of that has been a work in progress so far this year. Connor Zary, Matt Coronato, and players like that, Dustin Wolf, even some in the American League. So that the two things that have been important for me have been the setting of the standard and identity and building that throughout the year and seeing the pieces of the future develop positively as well. And for me, it's always been let the results fall where they may.
Yeah, for me, I don't care about wins, losses, where you finish in the Pacific Division or Western Conference or in the overall standings. The measure that I would define as success is divided into two groups, similar to yours, Pat, where in the U24 group, you want to see progress. You want to see progress from your guys that are in the NHL, whether that's going to be a Matt Coronato, a Dustin Wolf, if we see Sam Honzik up again, so on and so forth. You want to, and that also extends to the Wranglers, but it also extends to the guys in junior, the guys in Europe that haven't made the trip over yet, haven't turned pro yet. You need to see the steps taken individually from your prospects, your U24 group, because that's going to be the group that in 2 to 3 years is creating significant competition, is creating significant up push. to the point where, and it leads me to the next point, your U-27 or your O-27 group, your over 27s, continue to provide and foster a competitive environment, continue to bring that leadership, set the standard, as you say, Pat, and really create the environment that when this U-24 group ends up getting to pro hockey, ends up getting to the Calgary Flames, you're in a position as an mm-hmm. older player, as a vet, to make sure that those young players, the next generation of Calgary Flames, are in a position to succeed and hit the ground running, because there's no secret that the Flames are skewing younger. They're going a direction where it's going to be a retool or a rebuild, or is a retool and a rebuild. Isn't going to be. It already is.
Yeah.
And the U-24 group is absolutely critical in making sure that the Calgary Flames are where they want to be in 3, 4, 5 years. And that falls on those players, those prospects, but a lot of the work has to be done by the veterans in creating a culture to make sure that that group is ready to succeed when they arrive.
Okay, this from Jeremy and Lacombe. Strong one from Paul to kick us off. Jeremy and Lacombe says, at what point does Devin Cooley get a shot? Not saying others have been bad, just want to know if Cooley gets a chance and how do they swing that? I would say two answers. First of all, the obvious one would be injury. I guess the two obvious ones would be injury and trade. So if a goalie were to be moved, or if one of Wolf or Vladar were to get hurt, knock on wood, that would give Devin Cooley an opportunity at the NHL level. But I also think, I don't think that those are the only ways. If all of a sudden one of those two really starts to struggle, I don't think it would be out of the question that the Flames would carry three goalies for a short period of time to get Cooley a little bit of NHL time in that way. So I think there are ways, but part of the reason why Cooley signed a two-way in year one and a one-way in year two is because this year was probably going to be more American League time. I think he came into the season eyes wide open on that, and I don't think it's a surprise that he's playing with the Wranglers right now to him and his camp. But that second year is the one where it feels like there's going to be more opportunity for him to get some NHL playing time. But those would be the two obvious reasons, or two obvious ways would be trade or injury. And then that third reason is I think there are ways that, especially if goaltending falls off a little bit for one or either of them, that you could carry three goaltenders for the time being for a game or two and then switch, and a game or two here and then switch, because much like Justin Kirkland,
yes,
you know, Devin Cooley would have the same waiver exemption for the 30 days on the roster or 10 games on the roster.
And I'm glad you brought that up so that I didn't have to, because you are in a position, if you're the Calgary Flames and you want to reward Devin Cooley with some NHL time. And why wouldn't you? He's got a 1.82 goals against average and a .946 save percentage to go along with a 6-1 record with the Wranglers. Like, he's been phenomenally lights out in the American Hockey League. And what you described, and I'll agree with, is largely a developmental year for the 27-year-old. But you have the ability, because he is exempt from waivers for 10 games or 30 days, if you have somebody on your NHL roster, whether it's Vladar or Wolf, that falters a little bit and you feel like you want to reward Devin Cooley a little bit, you can bring him up for a spot start and send him right back down the next day and not have to worry about if one of the other 31 NHL teams is going to be able to snag him, because you do have that exemption for any given period of time. You're right that it would be injury or trade is sort of the automatic de facto, well, you would automatically see Devin Cooley come up to join the tandem. But I can see a scenario, too, where maybe things aren't going 100% and they've been going quite well for Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar. I mean, the Calgary Flames have the fourth highest 5-on-5 save percentage in the league right now. But if something should happen to falter, or there's a tweak here or there and you want to give a guy 2 or 3 days off but isn't, you know, an IR candidate or anything like that, I can see a scenario where Devin Cooley not only comes up but gets some time.
This one from Angus, who says, what do you guys think of a Trent Frederick trade for the Flames? He's 26, can play center, has size and some skill, and seems like a potential low-cost acquisition. Frederick had 40 points, a career year for him last year in Boston, including 18 goals. He is 26. He'll be 27 in February. He's got size, 6'3", 220. He's a former first-round pick. The only thing is, I don't love the age. I don't know if it fits the age range quite ideally. I would still, if the Flames are going to be giving up assets to bring in a center to play right now, I think 23 is your target, not 26, almost 27. So I just, the player I'm fine with, I think he's currently playing kind of middle six, third line wing minutes for the Bruins right now. Don't mind the player at all. I just don't know if the Flames are the right fit. I mean, Boston has had their struggles to start the year, but I don't know if Frederick's age fits Calgary's vision quite perfectly. So that would be, with no disrespect, Angus, for me, that would be a little further down the list in terms of a target.
Well, and if I'm the Calgary Flames and I'm looking at this potential acquisition, why can't I just wait till the summer? He's going to be an unrestricted free agent, depending on whether or not he resigns before July 1 with the Boston Bruins. But he's on pace to be, or on schedule to be, an unrestricted free agent. So if you have significant interest in him, then you can grab him for free without it costing you an asset.
I still don't mind the idea of them going to find a center. I just don't know if that particular center is the perfect fit. This from Paul and Chestermere. Pat, play GM for a minute. Trade Rasmus Anderson to a team of your choosing that you think could really use him. What does the return look like? Okay, off the top of my head, player that could really use what Rasmus Anderson brings. Well, for me, it would be...
To me, there's 31 teams.
Yeah, I'm trying. I mean, like, abstractly. Lots of them could use him. Don't get me wrong. But the team that there's two that come to mind right away. Toronto, Dallas, both teams who are looking to get over humps. And, you know, Toronto has gotten to one second round in, feels like, our lifetime. And Dallas has been very, very good, but hasn't been able to get to that top of the mountain. You know, they brought in Chris Tanev, couldn't retain him this year. Toronto has made lots of acquisitions. Rasmus Anderson, I think, would be a huge piece for both teams. And both sides could use a right shot number one defender like him as well. So Toronto and Dallas come to mind right away. I didn't want to say Edmonton because
I thought you were saving it for me.
Okay, go for it.
Well, I was just
no way am I trading him there. So,
well, yeah. As long as he doesn't sign an extension, you could probably live with that short term pain. But when you look at the defense that the Edmonton Oilers, and you'd have to find a way if you're the Edmonton Oilers to create the cap space for it. But I mean, your bottom four in Edmonton are Darnell Nurse, Ty Emberson, Brett Kulak, Troy Stetcher.
Like, stop.
They are far and away the team that needs a defenseman the most.
As the general manager of the Calgary Flames, are you making that deal?
If you can guarantee me, and I can't imagine a scenario where Rasmus Anderson would sign an extension there, I would take all of those assets and make them pay a premium.
Dan from Lethbridge says, Pat, what's your opinion of trading Vladar to the Avalanche? Is they're in desperate need for a goalie? What do you think the Flames would get back, then bring up Cooley to play with Wolf? If Colorado is willing to give me more than what I paid to bring Vladar in, then I'm ready to have a conversation. Like, if I can get a second and a fourth out of Colorado, then yeah, let's have that conversation. Because I don't mind the idea of Cooley joining one of these two guys and that being your tandem. So I don't, if the Avalanche or another team that's hurting in net were to come to the Flames and say, hey, we're willing to give you higher than a third round pick. Like, it would have to be a second round pick plus for me to make that move right now. Otherwise, I'd want to let this play out a little bit more to get more of a body of work, to get more of just an overall resume to make a decision as to whether I want to re-sign or if I want to make a deal closer to the deadline or potentially just, you know, walk away and part ways in free agency. But if I could get kind of a second round pick plus for him, then I'd be willing to have that conversation.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be actively shopping Dan Vladar at this point, but the Colorado Avalanche obviously have goaltending issues with Georgiev having, what, like an .850 save percentage or somewhere around that mark so far this season, and the Colorado Avalanche as a whole are certainly floundering as a result of defense and goaltending. So yeah, if you're coming to me and I hold all the cards, I hold the leverage, and I've got the goalie you want, I'm holding out for something like a second round pick. You have to give me some sort of incentive to make a deal right now to help another team when I'm still sorting out my own goaltending situation between Wolf, Vladar, and Cooley, you're going to have to step up and give me something that's probably a little above market value before we start having a conversation.
This one reads from Kyle. What I'm truly wondering, Pat, now stay with me. Why does toast always land buttered side down? This is what keeps me up at night. Seriously, though, I thought Hanley was a great addition. He's consistent regardless of when and where he's put in, and I feel like that's what the Flames need. Why do you think he's not getting much time? It's got to be hard to go from sitting for weeks to suddenly in a game, then sitting. And that's definitely not an easy thing to do. But, you know, Joel Hanley is in his 30s. He's a good pro, a great pro. He is universally loved in every locker room he's ever been in, NHL, American League. And I think, honestly, the you're right. Like, when he's in there, you know exactly what you're going to get from him. It's a pretty steady, innocuous brand of hockey that he plays at the NHL level. But I don't know, like, if you compare it to what other guys can bring, I don't know if he's going to win the battle more often than not. He doesn't bring the physicality that a Pahal brings, right? He doesn't bring the power play acumen that a Barry brings. Doesn't bring the skating that a Jake Bean can bring to the table, those types of things. So I would say that would be the reason why he's been on the outside looking in right now.
Yeah, and if you're grabbing a pen and paper or in back of a napkin or something and sketching out Calgary's depth chart on defense, and you can put Anderson, Uyghur, Ball, 1, 2, 3, and then you've got Miramanov, Pahal, Barry, Bean, Hanley. You're just jotting it out. Hanley's my number 8 on the list. So in order for him to get into the lineup, you either need to get him in so that it hasn't been too long, he hasn't sat too long, and the rust starts creeping in, or you're going to need an injury for him to see more playing time. It's just pure slotting in the sense that, for the reasons you mentioned, where he doesn't have the physicality of a Pahal or the offensive instincts of a Barry or the puck moving ability of a Bean, he grades out okay across the board, but he doesn't have a defining trait. And by grading out across the board sort of evenly, makes it easier for him to jump into the lineup after sitting for 3 weeks or a month and not looking like he's skipped a beat or he's out of place a little bit. But the fact that you've got four other defensemen that are sort of in that grouping that are able to do something better that you're not, I think keeps them down the depth chart a little bit.
This says, why won't they try Zeri at center? Do they not view him as a center anymore? I think it's more just that they really like him on the wing. Because I'm with this texter. I would really like to see Zeri given a long run down the middle at some point as well. But they just have not. They have not done that as of yet, as we know, and they seem very reticent to do so. Yeah. And I do think it's because they feel that Zeri can give them more offense right now from the wing. But I don't know. I just, of all the internal options they've got right now, Pospisil, Sharangovich, who, you know, Sharangovich has actually been pretty decent in the faceoff circle over the last few games, and that line showed a little bit of promise against Edmonton on Sunday. So I'm not completely, as much as I've been very publicly against, not against, but like, you know, I have not loved Sharangovich's body of work down the middle. It's been okay. Like, it's been pretty decent so far this year. So I'm willing to let that continue, and I'm willing to change my mind easily on that if that story takes a big step positively. But still, Sharangovich, Pospisil, Zeri, the guy that I think has the best opportunity to kind of be Calgary's long-term number 2C, I still think it's Zeri, at least of the internal options they've got right now.
I think in terms of keeping Zeri on the wing or not moving him down the middle, depending on which way you want to look at it, is just because Zeri's been vibing so far this season. I think he's been one of Calgary's most dynamic forwards, and you don't want to take that away from him and put other responsibilities on him when things have been going really well for him. Now, having said that, I feel like his last game or his last couple of games haven't been quite as good as what we've seen so far to the point of that this season. And I'll agree with you, Pat. If we're picking between Pospisil, Sharangovich, and Zeri as a potential long-term second-line center, I think Zeri's skill set and overall sort of attention to detail fits that position better than the other two. But the way he started the season on the wing, primarily with Backlund and Coleman, I'm very content with what I've seen at both ends of the ice. So with that, I would just kind of continue to let him cook, if you will, on what he's been able to do so far down the left side.
Here's Tim in Moose Jaw, who says, two things. The Flames have an abundance of D-men, and there's teams like the Islanders, for example, who need D-men. Do you see the Flames making moves to move out some? And two, thoughts on the Flames possibly being in the running for Nick Robertson out of Toronto. He kind of fits the age range, but not sure where he'd fit in the lineup as a left winger. And on the second one, I don't ever, like, I still think there's a lot of upside. Like, does Nick Robertson have the upside of his brother? No. Does he still have more upside than what we've seen so far from him? I think yes. So I never have a problem with the Flames going and betting on upside and trying to get a little bit more out of a player that maybe isn't getting the most out of in his current spot.
Market inefficiency?
That market inefficiency indeed, which I think it would be with a guy like Nick Robertson. So I don't mind that. He's not the priority position for sure. He's not the center iceman that you're like, they could really use that now and long term. And as for the D-men thing, I absolutely think if they could get a taker for a guy like Hanley, if they could get somebody to give them a draft pick, I think Craig Conroy, just based on some of the conversations I've had with different people, I think Conroy would be interested in having a conversation if he could get a pick. I think there'd actually be takers for Hanley on waivers, and I don't think they want to lose a guy for nothing like they did with Cole Schwindt earlier. But if there was somebody offering a later round pick for a Hanley, I think the Flames would be interested in doing that. It would clear up the logjam a little bit, and it would allow them to bring up another forward to carry 14 instead of 13 like they've been doing.
Yeah, if you can find a fit with another team where, if we're talking about Hanley specifically, if you can get an asset from him, whether it's even a prospect that's already in somebody's system but isn't going to eat up a spot on your NHL roster, it's something I would explore absolutely.
Okay, keep them coming. Flames Talk Mailbag is what we're doing this hour with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, 960, 960. Still we got lots of text to get to, and you still have an opportunity to get some more in. Leave your name on it if you want to get some credit for the question. We'll try to get to as many as we possibly can in the second half of this hour. We are coming at you, Steinberg and Vickers, from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960 960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk Mailbag on this Tuesday with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Good stuff so far on the text line. Let's keep it coming at 960 960. And got lots of them to roll through, so let's go right to it. This one from Dave. Guys, just wondering what you guys think about Pospisil. He's been getting a lot of dumb penalties, and the one against the Oilers was really bad. Is it time he sits out? That comes from Dave. Is it time for him to sit out? I don't think so. I understand the frustration of the penalty. I really do. I also think he's a player that needs to play on the edge to be the most effective. And thus, I have a really hard time determining what exactly the right plan is for Martin Pospisil. Like, you know, we heard Ryan Huska say postgame on Sunday, like, you know, he's got to stop. It's not okay, and we'll try to coach it out of him and all that type of stuff. But how much do you want to coach it out of him, knowing that he is the most effective and the impactful guy that he is when he's playing on the edge? And guys who play on the edge are sometimes going to take penalties, overzealous penalties. And, you know, some of the, like, for instance, when he got benched against Pittsburgh, those were lazy penalties.
Yes.
The penalty that he took against Edmonton, while poorly timed and led to the game-winning goal, that was more of an overzealous battle penalty that especially in hindsight, I have less of a problem with. Obviously, yes, please be in control of your stick at that time of the game, but I have less of a problem with it than some of the other ones we've seen. And I just, you don't want to neuter the player, right? And that, a watered down Martin Pospisil, I don't know if is an everyday NHLer, but a Martin Pospisil who is full steam ahead, that guy's an impactful full-time NHLer. And so that's why I've got a really real tough dilemma with this one, because if you really drill into him to stop taking penalties, Does that take away from his effectiveness because he's trying not to take penalties?
Well,
is it better to just let him figure it out on his own?
In fairness, Ryan Huska is a lot more accepting of a boarding or a roughing type penalty than stick penalties. And you go back to the high stick on Ekholm. If he just does a drive-by past Ekholm, doesn't initiate contact, because they were both going in for a loose puck. It was going to be a loose puck battle. Pospisil goes to lift the stick, catches Ekholm in the face. If he just does a drive-by, Ekholm ups it to Dreisaitl, for example, and then a pass or a shot later, it's in the back of the net. It's like, okay, well, why wouldn't Pospisil engage with that guy? And to me, it's just Pospisil right now is tiptoeing. He's playing hesitant. He's playing like he's thinking about what not to do out there instead of just instinctually doing what got him there. So I don't have the overall arching answer as to how you get Martin Pospisil to be more effective, whether it's put him on the fourth line and have him keep a close eye on Ryan Lomberg, whether it's, I don't believe sitting him is the answer at all, but at some point you got to figure out how to get Martin Pospisil back to being the aggressor, because right now, to your point, he's playing hesitant and he's playing very much unlike the game that made him a fan favorite last year.
This one from our buddy Mick, who says, the Sabres need a veteran winger in the top nine. Would Mantha and Rooney fetch Peyton Krebs? I don't think so. I don't think a couple of over 30 vets would get, and I know that Krebs is way down the lineup there, and I don't think Krebs is a bad target to go after, but I'm not certain you'd be able to get him for a couple of veterans. I still think you'd have to give up some sort of an asset. I don't think you need to give up a first rounder for him. I don't think you need to give up a grade A prospect. Like, I think that you could market inefficiency. I think you could get a guy like Krebs on a pretty bargain deal. I just don't know if a couple of veterans would be able to bring him in myself.
I wonder if that's not, if I'm looking at it from Buffalo's perspective, and this isn't Sabres talk, but I wonder if Krebs isn't a sweetener in a deal to get somebody that profiles a little bit higher to come into your top six, as opposed to trading Krebs as a primary piece to the Calgary Flames. I look at him as a guy that the Buffalo Sabres could add to something else in order to get a real, true impact player that can slot into their top line or their top six, as opposed to, well, we're going to send Krebs one direction and see if we can get back a couple pieces that might just happen to fit what we need.
Okay, this reads from Chris and Terrace. Ooh, Northern Coast. Patton Vickers, with all the talk of a center, why don't they bring up a guy who's red hot like Rory Karens? I feel like he needs to get a look. I listen every day still. Take care from Chris. I don't think Karens right now is the answer. He's just for the first time finding consistent success at the highest level he's ever been at in the American League. I think instead of rushing him to the NHL now, let him keep on building confidence and building his repertoire and all of that at the American League level. And then, like, maybe second half of the season, if he continues to carry this through and he continues to play really quality center ice minutes, then you can really start to have that conversation. But we're still only a month into the season. I don't think you need to rush a recall for Karens, who's never played NHL hockey before. He's been a great story, and I'm not trying to discount the story. I think the story's great and something you'd love to see, but that doesn't mean you need to just all of a sudden knee-jerk him up to the NHL, you know?
Yeah, I agree. He's had such a fantastic start with the Wranglers this season, and he's a top 10 scorer in the American Hockey League. But I don't know if he's necessarily ready to make that next jump into an NHL top six or middle six role. He's a guy that I would be very patient with if I'm the Calgary Flames. He does have a history of being an offensive producer. Again, 11 points in 10 games with the Wranglers this season. Standout career in the Ontario Hockey League. But this is, as you mentioned, the first time he's found his stride at the American Hockey League level for a stretch like this. And I let him just settle in and continue to build and see where he can take it at the AHL level before I experiment with him at the NHL.
This from Francis, who says, so far, who will be this year's All-Star representative if there is one? Well, there is no All-Star game this year because it's Four Nations Face-Off. But if there was one, it would be Rasmus Anderson,
yeah,
right?
I think so. I mean, that's the de facto answer. And I can't think of anybody that would supplant my opinion of who should be the representative for the Calgary Flames in a skills showcase like that. To me, Rasmus Anderson's been the best player for the Calgary Flames.
This says, so being this from Andre, so being the team is in Montreal, Flames have a surplus of D-men and Montreal's in need. Do they have a center that a trade could make sense for? They do. He's playing on the wing, but I think Kirby Dach is a perfect candidate for what the Flames are looking at. Now, you're not going to get him for a depth D-man. You're going to have to give something up to bring Kirby Dach in, but I think Kirby Dach, I think Connor McMichael, I think Shane Pinto, I don't mind Krebs either. Those are for Phil Tomasino, who you brought up. There's four or five names that I think are real good fits for what the Flames are trying to do. I think the Flames would absolutely be interested in Kirby Dach. It sounds like Montreal is like, oh, what do we want to do here? Dach is already signed, so you'd have some cost certainty with that going forward. So do I think there's a center in Montreal that the Flames could target? Yes, his name is Kirby Dach, and I think that would be a really good fit. I don't think a depth D-man is going to get it done, though.
No, and whether you or not you buy into sunk cost fallacy, I don't think Kirby Dach costs the Calgary Flames what the Montreal Canadiens paid for him a couple seasons ago, but at the same time, Montreal still sacrificed the number 13 pick by way of sacrificing Alexander Romanov to acquire that 13th overall pick that they ended up flipping to Chicago. I just don't see Dach being a guy that the Montreal Canadiens are willing to part with just yet.
This one at 960. Jason from Airdrie, why do you guys always drive a guy out of town? Rasmus is a stud and never said he wouldn't play here, so why push him out?
I don't.
What on God's green earth are you talking about, Jason? I have been adamant that keeping Rasmus is the only thing the Flames should be thinking of. If Rasmus wants to stay, he should be re-signed. Jason, I don't know what you're listening to, but you're not listening to this program if you're thinking that we're trying to run that guy out of town, because that's incorrect. I don't think choosing to shop Rasmus Anderson makes a lick of sense. And if there is an openness on his side to re-sign, then I think the Flames should do what it takes to keep him. If that means giving him $9 million a year, then that means giving him $9 million a year, because you know what? Based on today's economics, he's worth that with what he is capable of bringing to your team and what he has brought to your team so far. So, Jason, I have no idea what you're listening to.
If you have the option of keeping Rasmus Anderson, you keep Rasmus Anderson. I think it's as simple as that.
Yeah. What do we got here at 960? Off the podcast, we did a little DJ power play thing. So lots of people texting in about that.
All good things, I assume.
So far, yeah. This says from Braden, any chance Coronado gets a look at center? Has the organization given up on that? Not right away. I don't think you want to overload a guy who's still learning what it takes to be a full-time NHLer.
That's 2 or 3 years down the road.
And I'd have no problem if they were to try it down the road, sure. But, I mean, it took Martin Pospisil in his, fifth North American professional season to get a look at center. I think you want to wait on that one.
Now, are you ready to roll your eyes? Because I'm going to make a world championship reference.
Never roll my eyes.
He played down the middle for Team USA at the World Championship 2023.
Yeah, he didn't go this past year, the year before.
Did a really good job down the middle and was used in all situations. But I don't think that's an NHL experiment that we're seeing in the near future whatsoever.
He played center at times during his career at Harvard as well. So it's not like he's not capable of doing it. I'm with you. I think that's maybe more of a longer term conversation. This from Steve. So why is Huska and a lot of people all over Pospisil when he took one penalty? And yes, Edmonton happened to score, but you have a $10.5 million player that took two penalties, and he's not doing what he should be doing in scoring. I'll take Pospisil any day when he's giving it his all. That comes from Steve. I just think it was the timing of the penalty, Steve, that had the head coach as frustrated as he was.
And he's a repeat offender in that sense of taking one really bad penalties, and two, as you mentioned, ill-timed bad penalties that don't need to be taken. Now, again, we can get into the whole debate about I don't have near the problem with the high stick as I do the trip / slew foot and some of the other holding or hooking penalties. But it's still, when you build up a resume of bad penalties at inopportune times, you don't get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a very fair way of putting it. This reads, it's a very fair question from Dave. Why don't we have more Battle of Albertas? There should be at least five. Well, the way the NHL schedule works, it's never going to be five. But in your division, with even divisions now, eight teams in all four divisions, I believe you play five of the teams four times and two teams three times. And I think it is an absolute farce that twice in 3 years, the NHL has decided that one of the hottest, even if it's not a hot rivalry around the league, it's the number one rivalry in a province. You should have Florida and Tampa play each other four times a year. Toronto and Montreal should play each other four times a year.
LA Anaheim
should play each other four times a year. Calgary-Vancouver, Calgary-Edmonton, Vancouver-Edmonton should all play each other four times a year. You know what? So be it. Like, okay, so it's not balanced year to year. Oh, well, so Calgary and San Jose only play three times, or Los Angeles and Edmonton only play three times. Like, you're still trying to build a brand. You're still trying to build excitement in your different markets. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know how they've let that happen twice in three seasons. I think it is comical that, and the first one happened after the two teams met in the playoffs for the first time in more than 30 years, and the following year they played three times all in the first half of the season. It made no sense to me. And the fact that they're doing it again, when the option is there for the Flames to play five of the teams in their division four times, and they're not doing it, it is borderline stupid that the NHL allows that to happen. I know making schedules is not easy. I know having 32 different buildings with concerts and other tenants and all of what goes in to that, I don't even think we have an idea of how complex that schedule matrix is. I don't care. Find a way to get the rivalries, the ones that matter the most to the teams in their markets, have them playing four times. Ridiculous that they allow this to happen twice in 3 years. Rant over.
No, that's done in my books. I don't have anything to add to that you didn't nail out of the park.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
What else we got here at 960? This from Dylan, who says, do you think there's a possible problem on a Zeri, Kadri, Kuzmenko line, being that it's three puck carriers and not spreading those guys out a bit limits the other three lines to almost exclusively dump and chase? Look, Kadri is as much of it, like that guy's a possession monster. He loves to have the puck on his stick. I do not say that in a derogatory way. He's at his best when the puck's on his stick and he has a lot of possession. Is he the world's best distributor? Maybe not. I mean, he's actually still pretty good at it, but he just
above average, but that's not his calling card.
He does like to have the puck. Zeri and Kuzmenko are very good with the puck on their stick, but Kuzmenko is a very good playmaker and puts, like, I would put Kuzmenko right behind Huberdeau when it comes to guys that can put passes on sticks. So you're like, ooh. Didn't see, you know, we're upstairs and I didn't see that pass. He's on the ice and he saw it. And Zeri actually is a pretty good distributor from what I've seen as well. And so I don't see a problem with that. And I'm actually kind of curious to see how it all plays out as they go on the same line Tuesday night in Montreal.
Yeah, and if you just run through the lines, like, I'm fine with a Coleman, Backlund, Coronado playing a direct game. Same with Lomberg, Rooney, Pospisil, or if it's Lomberg, Kirkland, Pospisil. And then you still have Huberdeau and Sharangovich, where are no slouches at holding onto the puck and trying to make plays. So I think you're really just looking at what does this do to the Coleman, Backlund, whomever line. And not to say that Coronado is just a whomever, but you can put literally anybody on that line. If they're playing direct, you're fine with that.
Yep. And finally, our last text on our mailbag today from Brendan in Invermeer. Guys, Zeri needs to be given an opportunity on power play one. What are your thoughts? Yeah, I mean, they took Kuzmenko off, put Coronado on, which I can kind of understand. Now it's a right shot swapping for a left shot, but you can understand they're both similar players, especially on the power play. They're both trigger men. They both have good shots. So I understand why Coronado would have been that guy. But if you wanted to put Zeri out there and give him a spot in Kuzmenko's slot, like maybe you don't use him necessarily as a bumper, but you could. I don't mind that idea if the power play remains kind of inconsistent or cold. Now, it did score on Sunday night, but if you're looking for a change, Zeri going on there, I have no problem with.
I'm in favor of swapping any part that might lead to cleaner zone entries, and I think Connor Zary can help that first unit. I've got no problem with exploring anything with the power play right now, regardless of whether or not they scored last game, because it just hasn't been to the point of where you need it to be for the Calgary Flames so far this season.
And there you go. Great stuff on the text line. That was a very productive Flames Talk mailbag on this Tuesday. They're pretty fun to do, hey?
They are fun to do.
Especially when you have an hour that opens up where there's nothing regularly scheduled like it did on this Tuesday. I was like, we got to pounce and make that a mailbag, and I'm glad we did. Great stuff on the text line. Thank you for all of your input. We'll do another mailbag down the road. We always try to make them a somewhat regular thing here on Flames Talk. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Connor Gronsdahl and Shan Vergy have been our producers, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.